Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jamie East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond. Welcome, welcome. It's the Dragoncast Christmas Day episode. I'm Jamie East.
And I'm Chris Mandel.
Well, I don't normally introduce myself.
I know you don't. I just feel as though we've got to move on from me being daddy all the time.
Hey, Jamie, don't mess with the thing if it's not broken, okay?
No, I suppose not. And, oh my goodness, it's the Christmas Day episode. Wait.
I think Jamie's going to get his Christmas hat. Oh no, I know what he's getting. Jamie's about to get his Christmas jumper.
Here it is.
Oh my god. Da 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 da. Oh.
Bit of a sexy striptease for YouTubers. Like and subscribe.
Here we go.
Like and subscribe. Oh. There we go.
Oh my god, it's great. That was a suspenseful pause.
I can't believe they didn't send one to you, Chris.
I know. I mean, listen. HBO have been very
maybe there's
good
just today. one per podcast. Maybe that's
maybe we're supposed to share it.
That's fine. You can have it for next year.
That would be nice. How is it? Is it nice? Good quality?
You know what? It is a good quality one because normally, kind of promo Christmas jumpers, not being disparaging to all of the other ones that I've had over the years, you wouldn't want to kind of like. You have to wear kind of rubber shoes when you wear them. You know what I mean? You wouldn't want to be anywhere near any naked flames. This one, however, it feels actual, like, doesn't feel like completely man-made, although I'm sure it's made out of recycled fucking tyres or something.
Yeah. How many children in Fleabottom died stitching that jumper?
Precisely.
It looks, I mean, it's also very hard to tell, but it looks very good stitching.
Thank you. Yeah. And also got sent, finally, got the Blu-ray of House of the Dragon.
Very
all
good.
All episodes on there. Also, there's a lot,
good extras.
Lot of extras on there as well. Okay. Over 1 hour of bonus content, including two exclusive featurettes. Return to the Seven Kingdoms reflects on the legacy of Game of Thrones and its connection to House of the Dragon, blah, 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 blah. Welcome to Westeros with Ryan Condal, Miguel Sapochnik, and George R.R. Martin. I've got a Blu-ray player.
This is the thing, isn't it?
Although, I've got a PS5, so I can watch it on the PS5.
Oh, you'll be fine then. Fine.
So, listen, what I'm going to do... I'm going to open the cellophane and I'm going to watch the extras, but then I'm going to give it away to a listener. So
lovely.
If you're listening, Chris, can you think of a question that someone could answer maybe and leave in either Twitter or YouTube comments?
Yes, I've got
House of the Dragon related. Yeah, go on then.
Oh, I was going to do a Game of Thrones related one. Okay.
Oh, okay. Game of Thrones then. Considering
Game of Thrones,
we're on
the question
rewatch.
Is what is the name of Davos's son? Who is in this episode that we're about to discuss today?
Fuck! I'd written in my notes. Who was that guy?
I can't even remember his name off the top of my head. It's one of those classic Game of Thrones, like slightly funny names.
Yeah.
So if you can get that, if you know it, write it down.
Yeah.
On a well, you could just email it, but if you want to send it on a stamped address envelope,
yeah.
Like the Blue Peter days, please do.
Yeah. I mean, don't rush. It's Christmas Day, you know.
That's right, yeah.
Chances are quite a few of you might have received this anyway from Santa.
This is true. I've got a question for you, and this is not a bit. This is not like a bit, is it, about the fact you got the DVD? My question is, does it have audio commentary on it?
Oh.
Because when I used to have a DVD player, back in the olden days, I'd watched episodes of, like, Futurama or, like, Scrubs or whatever, and I knew all the words. I would then listen to it with the audio commentary and just hear them just, like, vibing away, and that was my favourite thing to do with DVDs, is just to, like...
No, it doesn't. I think it's weird, isn't it? Maybe... Why don't they do it? Is that because of streaming? Is that because streaming just took
and
over?
Yeah, and also, it's just probably a bit, like... I don't know, probably a bit of a pain to do, isn't it? Like, if you're like Matt Smith having to sit through a whole episode and being like,
who are the classic? There are some classic DVD commentaries, aren't there? I think Shaun of the Dead's like a...
Shaun of the Dead one is really good, yeah. Yeah.
And there's some good ones with stuff like... I think Kevin Smith's always game for one. Seth Rogen.
I think all of the...
The
like,
usual kind of suspects.
They're like... super bad sort of era, like, of films, you know, like the sort of Seth Rogen, Michael Cera, like any of those like goofy stonery films, they always have good
I might be imagining that there's really good ones for The West Wing as well. Maybe I'm imagining that.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
Like David Fincher maybe for Fight Club.
It used to be a whole thing, but I think now I just don't think you get it. I mean, I can, yeah.
It's going to be economic, isn't it? It's going to be purely economic. Whereas, like, back in the day when, like, the fucking Matrix came out on DVD or whatever, and they would make as much, if not more, money from the DVD release than they would the cinema release. It was all about, right, how can we encourage people to buy the Matrix rather than Fight Club? And one way of doing that was to have a really good kind of DVD commentary on it. Whereas now it's just kind of like, well, I'm guessing most people will own this.
Yeah.
Maybe just as collector's items.
Yeah, I think that's it.
You know,
a lot of films like back in even you know the noughties, they were made at a loss at the box office because they would recoup it. And it's those sort of mid tier comedies. Like you don't really get many films like Superbad, for example, in the cinema now. Everything is either like IP, like Marvel, Star Wars, Indiana Jones. Or it's like super indie black and white about someone making a sandwich that's like starring Adam Driver. And you don't get anything in the middle. That is all now basically television. It's all like...
Yeah, true.
Like the sort of cool... like something like Severance, which was one of my favourite things this year. That would have been a film 10 years ago or 20 years ago.
It would have sank. And
but it would have been... You'd have it on DVD. So that's our little State of the Union for Christmas Day.
I found a website called ratethatcommentary.com. It's saying the top 100 commentary tracks on DVD. And I tell you what, this is a good example of why they were so good, is because like in the top 10, I would say maybe only one of them is probably considered to be like a classic film.
Right.
The rest are all kind of like fodder. So at 10 is like The Island, which is like a pretty shit Michael Bay film. I think it had Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts, maybe, I think, in it. I might be imagining that. Then there was actually Michael Bay does really well. Then there's The Rock, which is, I guess, a bit of a classic Nicolas Cage, Ed Harris. Perfect Storm, great film. Seabiscuit. I'd have to be on a very long flight to be...
Even on a long flight, you can just fall asleep. You don't have to watch anything.
Francis Ford Coppola doing The Godfather. That's a commentary you'd probably pay attention to.
That is a Christmas Day evening treat for the family.
Then you've got like Armageddon.
Yeah.
I mean, Michael Bay is actually owning this. What does he do in them? Armageddon, Transformers, Ocean's 12.
That would be fun. That would be good.
And then there's... David Fincher's Zodiac is in there as well.
Okay, anyway. Do you know what I would love a director's commentary watch along of?
Yeah.
Is Love Actually, because first of all, there's like 36 characters.
Yes.
And well,
hang on, there's a show coming out over Christmas, right?
A Love Actually show.
Oh, have you not seen? You know they did like the Friends reunion.
They've done
a Love Actually reunion because it's something like 25, 30 years, maybe something like that. And there's like, it's American. It's done by like AMC or ABC or something like that. But it's got like Hugh Grant, Emma Thompson, you know, a kind of healthy portion of the principal cast together. Jojen's there.
Oh, yeah, of course. Your man Jojen Reed.
Yeah.
tiny. He was like such a little child in that film, wasn't he?
I know. Well, he's cursed with a baby face, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think he's about six. He's 65 now.
Do you... He's actually just retired. Came out of retirement to do the reunion. Yeah.
His knees have gone.
I like that. I like Love Actually. I know it's a bit shit, but like, it's the shit is the point. The cheesy, schmaltzy shitness is the point. It's delightful.
Well, that's what Richard Curtis does so well, isn't he? He kind of has that... He knows how to turn the schmaltz up just like that. He's very good at that. But also some real despair in there as well.
Yeah.
The Joni Mitchell Ooh. Emma Thompson scene is pretty yeah. cutting.
It's hard. However, you know, like, you want to hate Alan Rickman, but he's dead. But you're like, what a bastard!
What a bastard indeed!
Who'd you and do also, that to you Emma know, Thompson, give her the necklace.
I know. But also, even if your marriage was on its last legs, like that one clearly was, I still wouldn't dare just buy my wife a Joni Mitchell CD.
Also, like, she's like, yeah. I already love Joni yeah. Mitchell, and he gets her like the best of Joni Mitchell. Like, yeah, mate, she's fucking heard it. Like, at least get her like a concert DVD yeah. with live commentary.
Yeah, Japanese import from Record Store Day or something.
That
yeah.
film wouldn't work in 2022, though, because he would just order something online, get it delivered to the office. Jobs are good.
Yeah. And... it's also, I mean, a lot of Richard Curtis films are very problematic nowadays.
Yeah. You know, oh my God. There's a lot of fatphobic stuff in there.
Fatphobic, it's just all pretty much all white. There's a lot of tokenism going on there.
Yeah.
There's the whole Keira Knightley storyline in that is pretty grim.
Oh my God, it's so pretty bad. Grim. The fact she actually goes out and. Also, there was the storyline that was scrapped from the film.
Was
concerning
there? What was it like?
Head teacher.
A Bukkake kind of thing.
The head teacher of the school where they do the nativity is like a lesbian and is dying. And apparently it's like an urban legend that they were like, it's too depressing. So they cut it out.
Would he have got bingo? Would he have got kind of Richard Curtis bingo if it included that in?
It sort of needs like an It's a Sin, like someone dying of like HIV or something to just really round it off.
It does. It does like a bit of tokenism. What was it, Notting Hill, where?
God.
Well, what's her face played someone in a wheelchair? Anyway.
So that's 12
anyway,
minutes.
What the hell
in,
are we talking about? 12 minutes in.
Talking
welcome. Actually. Yeah. Welcome to Dragon Cast. It is the final watch along of season 2, and it's the big one. It is season 2, episode 9, Blackwater. Before we get into it. Quick reminder from our sister podcast previously on the goings on, who did what, who shot what, no, there's no guns, and who killed everyone. Have a listen to this, back in a minute. Stannis' fleet edges ever closer to King's Landing. Davos and his son Mathos discuss the difficult forthcoming battle. The city walls have never before been breached. Mathos has faith that Stannis will sit upon the Iron Throne by sunrise. Within the walls of the city, Cersei drinks wine in her quarters. Pycelle visits her and gives her a vial containing essence of nightshade, a poison to be used as a last resort should Stannis win the battle and capture them. Bronn drinks with the Lannister soldiers. The mood is good despite the imminent battle, but doesn't get on so well with the Hound. Just as bloodshed seems inevitable, the city bells announce the arrival of Stannis. From the castle walls, Joffrey demands to know why his fleet are not in the water as Stannis' own fleet nears. Tyrion, however, has clearly been very busy making other plans. His investigations from the last episode have bore fruit, and a single vessel from the Lannister fleet loaded with wildfire sails right into the heart of Stannis' ships. A highly flammable, highly volatile green liquid, wildfire is a prime weapon of war with its innate power to cause very big explosions. Tyrion signals for Bronn to fire a flaming arrow from the beach directly to the trailed wildfire. The green fire tears through Stannis' fleet, destroying Davos' ship and killing his son instantly, with scorched, burning men screaming as their lives go up in wildfire smoke. The sounds of the dying in the water carry across the battlements, where Tyrion and the Hound appear shocked and Joffrey grins. Aboard his own ship, Stannis prepares his remaining army to land in rowboats and take King's Landing. In the relative safety of the Holdfast, Cersei, Sansa, Shae and the ladies of the court await the outcome of the battle outside. Cersei drinks wine and torments Sansa, at times terrifying her with details of what will happen to the women if Stannis takes King's Landing.
The executioner, Cyrilyn Payne, stands guard should the worst have to happen. Stannis's rowboat shore at King's Landing. The Hound leads a group of soldiers, including Lancel Lannister, to meet them head-on. Lancel is struck in the arm by an arrow and retreats from the battlefield. Back in the Holdfast, Cersei begins to question Shae about her past, but is interrupted when Lancel bursts in. He tells Cersei that Stannis is at the city walls. Cersei commands him to remove Joffrey from the battle immediately. On the battlefield, the Hound is momentarily stopped in his tracks when a burning enemy soldier runs screaming at him. Just as the Hound looks doomed to die, the enemy is killed by Bronze Arrow. The Hound retreats from battle, only for Joffrey to command him to return. The Hound pours scorn upon Joffrey and leaves anyway. Lancel arrives under Cersei's order to remove Joffrey from the fight. Joffrey offers no resistance to the idea and beats a hasty retreat. His cowardly departure disheartens the men on the front line, but Tyrion rouses them with a bold speech. Back at the Holdfast, Lancel warns Cersei that the battle is lost if Joffrey doesn't return to fight. Cersei refuses to allow it and storms out. Shae tells Sansa to lock herself in her quarters and await Stannis. Upon entering her room, she's met by the Hound, who offers to keep her safe and take her north to Winterfell. Sansa declines. As the battle rages on, Tyrion leads the troops through the tunnels beneath King's Landing and surprises Stannis' soldiers with an attack from the rear, during which Tyrion is betrayed by Ser Mandon, who brings his blade down across Tyrion's face. Mandon is speared through the eye and killed by Podrick Payne, Tyrion's squire. In the throne room, Cersei is seated upon the Iron Throne with her son Tommen, telling him a story as she prepares the nightshade. In the nick of time, Tywin Lannister and his new allies from House Tyrell arrive and defeat Stannis' army. Stannis is dragged from the battle by his men, screaming at them to stand and fight. And in the throne room, Cersei is stopped from giving the poison to Tommen at the last moment as the warrior in Renly's armour enters and reveals himself as Ser Loras Tyrell. Tywin Lannister marches into the throne room and announces the battle is over and the Lannisters have won.
Am I right in thinking, Chris Mandel, this was the first set-piece Game of Thrones episode? This was like the big first like event episode, right? Before then, it had just been to-ing and fro-ing, and this was the first one to set the stall for what we now, what was almost like a Game of Thrones tradition with Hard Home, with Battle of the Bastards, with The Long Night, with all of those ones that follow.
Pretty much every season has a set-piece around this time. So the next season is the Red Wedding, which is kind of different because most of the episode's not about the wedding. Season four, you have the wildlings invading the wall. Season five, you have Hard Home. Season six, you have Battle of the Bastards.
Your favourite. Yep.
Season seven, you have the one where they go and try and catch a white and the dragon gets killed. And then season eight.
That's a good one.
So there's a sort of precedent. And you know, the sort of the abridged version is that season one, they couldn't really show any battles because they didn't have the money.
They barely had the money in this one, let's be frank.
Yeah, and it's slimmed down considerably, but it's fucking epic all the same. I mean, it's cleverly done, but we've talked about this episode on the podcast before. I absolutely love it. I think it's one of my favourites. I think it does.
Why? What do you like? What do you like about it so much?
So I'll tell you what I don't like about other ones. Okay, so the wildlings attacking the wall, you know, you've got good guys, bad guys, right? I mean, it's complicated because why they want to cross south is quite understandable, but the wildlings aren't going to kill all the Night's Watch and take over. You just know that, right? Battle of the Bastards, again, like, they set up for Ramsay to get his just desserts, right? The whole story's sort of predicated on, we've got to get rid of Ramsay, otherwise we're all fucked and the show's not going to end. The reason I like Blackwater is, at this point in the show, we're all Team Stark, right? They're the guys we want to win. And neither of them are in this battle. You've got the Lannisters and you've got Stannis. And either of them winning is bad for the Starks. Either of them losing is bad for the Starks. And so what I like about this is that you're sort of watching and you're kind of going, well, is it good that Stannis is doing well? Is it bad that Tyrion might get killed? Like, how do I feel about Cersei being facing up to her sort of impending death? it's just morally complicated, and I think that's what I really like about it. And it just, when I was watching it the first time, I remember it so well. I didn't know who I was supposed to root for, and I think that makes it really exciting compared to some of the later sort of fights and battles on the show.
That's a good point, because I think naturally you are drawn to the goodies, you know, and I guess not having that allegiance allows you just to kind of watch it as a spectacle rather than possibly not as invested in who wins. Does that make sense? So you so you can pay attention to the kind of
I think it's just cool to just be like, I don't know what the show, who the show wants me to root for. Because by this point in the show, like, Tyrion is great, right? We love Tyrion.
Yeah, we do. We love Tyrion.
He's part
we
of
like Sansa.
Yeah, love Sansa. Yeah. We hate Joffrey. We hate Cersei. But then Stannis is not likable either. And so it's
not, but
difficult.
Then also he's also the rightful heir to the throne.
Yeah. It's so violent, and there's so many people die, and you keep thinking, like, this is barbaric, like, and it doesn't, it's just kind of funny to me that, like, neither of them, no one comes out of this in the very, very end of the show. Like, it's quite insignificant in the grand scheme of things. So I just love it. Yeah. I think it looks great. I think the set piece with the wildfire is just amazing. It's savage.
Oh, so good. It's the Thinking Man's Crumpet episode, isn't it?
One more thing, which we'll get into in a sec, I suppose, is there's tons of people involved. So you've got, like, Sansa, you've got the Hound, you've got Stannis, you've
got Davos, everyone.
And later on, like, when Jon is, like, fighting the wildlings, it's just a bit like, oh, you've got, like, Jon and, like, Gren and Pip and Bob, and I don't know who all these people are. I don't care about any of them. Like, they're just all of the random guys up there. No one in Westeros knows that fight's happening. No one else cares. Do you know what I mean? It just feels hard to sort of latch onto it. So, yeah. Where do you want to start? Where should we go?
Well, I guess we go chronologically, really. I mean, first of all, I wonder what the shoot was like, because this must have been, it was all at night. It must have been pretty arduous, although I'm guessing kind of because we hadn't reached kind of serious Game of Thrones budgets. Like, for instance, Tyrion all the way through the episode does little except stare past a camera on a turret. That's like his main his main job, is to kind of like look frightened. Remind me of the kind of plot or the kind of motivation between Joffrey and Tyrion then, because that was the only thing that I was slightly confused about. So I really enjoyed what's Joffrey actor called again?
Jack Gleeson.
He played Joffrey's cowardice so well in this episode in particular, but throughout that, you know, I loved the scene where was it Loras who came back? No, not Loras. It was Loras who went back for him to tell him his mum wanted him. And there was just like, oh, how much does she want me? Does she really? You know, that kind of, it was so well done.
It's quite comic. And I think, like, I think that comes out in the show far more than it is in the book, right? And I found there were moments of, like, black comedy. And I loved that particularly. Joffrey is such a man-child. And he's quite tethered to his mum in a weird way. And he's trying to be the big man, isn't he? He's like, well, is it important? Is it urgent? And it's like, we're being invaded. Like, of course.
Oh, he's the classic. He's the classic guy in a pub fight. Someone hold me back. Someone hold me back. It's that guy.
I could have had him.
Kind of looked through where I was a bit kind of like confused.
Is it, why is Tyrion leading the army?
Had he just assumed that responsibility?
So, I think, I can't remember because I haven't seen any since Ghost of Harrenhal. I think because Tyrion is sort of the only voice of reason in this sort of like council that they've got, Joffrey sort of makes him lead the charge. And it's kind of similar to last season. Tyrion's like brought his men down to his father's camp, and his dad's like, oh, you're in the first wave. And I think my take was that Joffrey's kind of like, if it goes badly, at least he'll get killed. Like, he almost wants his uncle out of the way. It's like a win-win. Like, if you do well, good for me. If you do badly, like, I don't have to fucking think about you.
Yeah.
And obviously, like, we do have that moment at the end of the episode where it's sort of implied that, like, well, we know that, like, Tywin sort of tries to have him killed, essentially, that he gets knocked out, and that's...
Yeah.
So my recollection, and it is a little hazy, is that he's kind of forced into it, and I think it's a sort of ritualistic humiliation from his family's part.
Right.
Which
fine.
Is, you know, he's not a warrior. Well, I mean, you could probably make the case that he's quite good, actually, but he's a strategy guy, you know? So that was the sort of reading I got from it.
And if you had to pick a hero of the episode, or I guess...
Ooh, that's a good question.
So, or a hero of... For me, it was the Hounds episode. Like, in hindsight, going back and watching this, I felt like the Hound had such a fucking great episode in this one, because you learnt more about him than anyone else, I think.
It's a really good... I think it's a really good season for him, but we've not seen him a lot in our episodes. But yeah, you get to see him quite scared, and I think that's really... It's a little bit of a trope, isn't it, of like the big brute actually is frightened. But it's quite traumatizing, you know. It's quite traumatizing to see him if he's freaking out, like,
yeah,
then we're all fucked, frankly. And I think the scale of it is really well communicated.
And something else that I'd written down, I'd just written the words blind faith down, because it occurred to me watching this that so much about the main characters throughout the whole of the series of Game of Thrones is based on nothing more than just sheer and utter blind faith.
Mm.
It's you've got Melisandre, you've got Stannis, you've got Jon, you've got Dany, you've got Joffrey even. All of them at some point are just going off the basis of complete and utter blind faith in what their belief system is, and nothing else. It's nuts. It's crazy.
It's sort of taking that point, is it's very like the ones with the most conviction sort of seem to do quite well. Everyone thinks they're doing the right thing, or the people that are, you know, involved, even sort of Theon, who's not in this episode, but like that attack he does on Winterfell, like he's doing that in sort of in good faith, weirdly. Like, he thinks that that's the right thing to do. He does a really shit job, which is sort of illustrative of like what happens when you don't maybe have enough blind faith, like maybe when you're you falter a little bit. But yeah, Stannis believes it's his right, and that is, I think we talked a lot in House of the Dragon, particularly at the end when Aegon is crowned, about that sort of spectacle. And I think Stannis charging into battle, Stannis, like, you know, the huge explosion and then sort of continuing to break rank and try and get in, and he very nearly succeeds if it's not for the Tyrell Lannister alliance at the very end of the episode coming sort of in. But like, he nearly does it, because I think he's quite inspiring. I think people see him on the battlefield and they're like, this is amazing, like he's still fighting even though his fleet blew up with bright green fire. It's definitely something that runs through the show, I think, in other episodes as well.
And something else that ran through the show quite a few times was the Reigns of Castamere. We heard it at least three times, I think. Fine, in the end credits. Was that Jarvis Cocker singing it? I think it was.
Yeah, they did have a really fun period where they were getting people to... Didn't Florence and the Machine do a song for them? And like...
Yes.
There was someone else.
Well, Will Champion is in the band of Reigns in the Red Wedding, the drummer of Coldplay.
That's right, yeah. And then who can forget the iconic Ed Sheeran appearance in season 7? Aged like milk, didn't it?
Whilst you reminisce about that wonderful Ed Sheeran cameo, here's a little word from our sponsors. See you in a sec.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Lots of kind of details that I really enjoyed from that. I loved that. I thought Bronn had a really good one as well. He'll be halfway up your ass before the night's through. It was a classic Bronn line. And I've written, who had the dagger? Was there someone at one point? I think it was the Hound. The Hound, someone at one
time. Is it the cat's paw dagger? Interesting. Someone reached. Spot that.
There was a scene. I think it was a scene, must have been with the Hound. Yes, it was Bronn. Did Bronn have the cat's paw dagger?
I just thought it was a generic dagger. I didn't think it was
right.
Because I'm sure Littlefinger must have that by now, I think. Doesn't he have it?
Well, he had it. I don't know if he still has it.
Doesn't he get it? Where does it go? Hang on. Where does it go? Where does that dagger go?
Well,
Arya
hasn't got it.
Hasn't got it. But she gets it. She uses it in the Night King. Hang on. She this would be good. Night this King. Would be some good homework for people. Slash yeah. me. Tracing tracing the journey.
Yeah, we need a cat's paw dagger timeline right from House of Dragon season one.
We need a correspondent. I thought that was just, you know, most people would have a dagger on their hip for... You know,
right. Okay. Fine.
Closer.
I'll let him off.
Yeah. Whatever. But I tell you what, I'd love to talk about is the scenes. Cersei, Sansa, Tommen, like Shay, like they're all in the tower,
in the panic room. Yeah.
That is Cersei's getting absolutely shit faced, and
classic Prosecco o'clock.
It's
can't tell you on here, love. DM me, can't tell you here, the snake's around. Classic Cersei.
And it's just, there's so much tension because Shay is Sansa's, like, I got this term wrong last
handmaiden.
Episode.
Well.
Handmaiden. It just sounds a little bit...
Lady in waiting.
Lady in waiting, like that. I think I said assistant last week.
Secretary, yeah.
She's there, and then Cersei almost thinks, oh, you're actually Tyrion's mistress, right? Because
she starts to put two and two together very quickly. Where it was about, was it about the curtsying? Was that where she kind of like sussed it out? It's like, oh,
and
how have
in,
you got
in,
to be from there to here in 3 years without being able to curtsy? That was it.
And it's very similar to Arya and Tywin in the Ghost of Harrenhal episode where he's like, prodding her like, who are you, and she's trying to like come up with a story on the fly and it's just not working. Like, these guys know their shit, like the Lannisters. But in an episode that I think is between the last one and this one, we found out that like Cersei thought she knew who Tyrion's lover was, and I think she thinks it's Roz, and Tyrion lies and says yes, it's her.
Yeah.
And she gets like the shit kicked out of her.
That's
and
right.
It's just
so
grim. But so you get that sacrifice, and then in this episode you think Shay's going to get sussed out anyway, and it's really tense. But Sansa kind of has this amazing moment where she realises Sir Illyn, that's the character's name?
Sir Illyn Payne.
Who executed Ned. He's there in the room with them. And I think for a while it's like this guy's killing the sort of slumber party vibe slightly. And then Sansa realizes, like, oh, I think he's there to, like, kill us if Stannis breaks into the castle.
Yeah, so that we don't talk. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Cersei said that he was there to protect them, whereas actually he was just there to kind of, like, take them out and then do himself in, presumably.
And you do think, like, that there's definitely a world in which you think that's going to happen. I think that's what's so clever. But all of those scenes, Sansa trying to get everyone to sing a little song and Cersei being like, fuck off.
And praying and kind of like, yeah, exactly. Doing a hobbycraft kind of group in the corner while Cersei's just like, you know, three sheets to the wind, wanting to poison
their son. Sansa's like, let's do some dream journaling. And everyone's like, I'm just trying to manifest not being killed. But Sansa's got so, you know, she's been really fucked around this season. And she's still kind of like, no, I can like be a bit of a beacon of hope for people. And, you know, I don't think personally, Sophie.
She's like Meghan. She's like Meghan.
People's princess. Mark II. I'm not getting into Meghan and Harry discourse on this podcast. And there is nothing I want to watch less than that fucking documentary.
That's boring.
But I would say also,
I want to read about an argument with my brother. I look at my mum, you know, fucking hell. Just nuts.
But no, I don't think Sophie Turner's like the most gifted actor on this show. But I think she does a great job. There's a lot to do in this. And I think she's sort of able to sort of really like handle that feeling that like Sansa's not been broken and that she's quite a powerful presence in that room. Whereas Cersei, born into that life and sort of, she doesn't have to impress anyone, she's the fucking queen. She's just like falls to pieces in the same way that Joffrey, you know,
goes
like,
to bits, goes to shit.
He gets kind of dragged out of the room and has to go onto the battlefield, and it's just all a bit like,
it's privilege, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's completely born out of privilege. I think I would. Sophie Turner, a wonderful lady. She's the only member of Game of Thrones cast that remembered me. I hosted the red carpet on what season would that have been? Season 6, maybe season 5, perhaps. Tower of London. They hired out the whole of Tower of London. All the cast were there. Going past.
I
and they were very pleasant.
I was at that one.
We
talked at that.
I think we probably did talk at that, didn't we? Yeah,
because I remember you left that party with the screeners for the first 4 episodes, and you were like, I'm off to go and watch these. And I was
didn't I?
So how did you get those?
But yeah, all of the rest of them were very pleasant to me and recognised me and had a chat to me and stuff. Sophie Turner came running over. She was like, hi, Jamie East. I was like, Sansa's my favourite now.
Okay, I feel bad saying she can't act. Sophie, if you're listening, I meant it about a different Sophie
listening. She won't be listening. She had babies with the Jonas Brothers, for goodness sake.
The Jonas Sons. Jonas Stepbrothers. Yeah. I don't know what they're called. They should all form a Jonas Brothers band with... Because they've all got kids now, I think. A new era of the Jonas Brothers.
Sons of Jonas. Am I getting confused? The tunnels in King's Landing, there was reference to the Targaryens built the tunnels. Are these the tunnels that we saw Rhaenyra escaping from to go to have sexy times with Uncle Daemon?
Most likely, most likely. I was trying when I was watching it to figure out if Rhaenyra's bedroom is in the show as someone else's bedroom. Because it must be. But I think that is sort of taking it a little bit too seriously.
No.
Not seriously, but...
No,
like,
it's not. Hey, this is Dragon Cast, Chris
Mandel. But, like, I don't think
the number one
thought... Because I don't think that literal set on House of the Dragon was on Game of Thrones, if that makes sense. So I'm like, I don't think the rooms correlate to the rooms on Game of Thrones. Having said that...
Oh, we can dream. We can but dream.
I know. First of all, would love to just go around that set because I'm really fascinated by it. Because it is apparently like a to scale fucking castle.
Yeah, well, I went to King's Landing in Belfast a couple of times, and that was the same. They had, it wasn't just like a crossroads set. It was an actual building. And, you know, normally, like, they create sets that just kind of just one wall so that you film against that wall and behind it is nothing. With King's Landing and what they've done in House of the Dragon 2, it's an actual building. So they can decide to shoot, or let's go into this stairwell here and shoot there, and you just walk bit up a bit, go into the bedroom, and you can actually walk around and kind of map it out. So it's, and it's there so was clever. Down to the level of detail, right? In the even the nails in the wood in King's Landing that I saw had the sigil, had the Lannister sigil.
Oh my god! Someone's gone round etching the little lion into all the nails.
Oh, it's amazing, amazing.
But answer your question about the tunnels, though. In season one, again, we sort of missed these out, but Arya, the reason she sort of gets lost and ends up living in the streets around the time Ned gets executed is she goes down into the tunnels when she's chasing pigeons for her sword lesson. You know, her sword master was that
With thingamajig. Yeah.
And she overhears, I think it's Varys and... Varys and Littlefinger, or she hears some people talking about Ned. She runs away, she gets lost, and when she sort of follows the tunnel, she comes out in like the middle of Fleabottom, and she ends up kind of just being lost. And that's why when we see her in Baelor, she's wandering around sort of cracking the necks of pigeons and trying to sort of like piece a meal together. So those are the same sort of tunnel system. And actually, I think in the final season, Jaime uses that to get into the castle to meet Cersei before the castle collapses.
Of so
it's kind of all there.
Love
in a manner of speaking.
Lovely stuff.
The Hound was great. We talked about him already.
I love that. But I'd forgotten that he had a complete collapse and just kind of gave up the battle and just went back to drink wine.
One thing we should mention about this episode is this is written by George R. R. Martin himself.
Was it? Oh.
Mm. He used to write one episode a season and stopped because
he was so busy, which is still clearly never going to finish.
It's never going to finish it. But have we talked about this, that he said in an interview like a month ago that like when House of the Dragon was coming out, his publishers were like, you need to work on the material around that book. And you need to stop writing Winds of Winter. So he was actively told to stop writing it. Oh my God.
That's a bit fucking annoying. That must be very annoying for people like that are waiting for that book. Because Jon Snow's still dead at the end of that.
Yeah. Dany's just been captured by the Dothraki again. You know, we all know how that plays out. But let's talk about...
we've not really talked about the battle.
It's kind of hard because it's sort of there's a lot of I do think this episode is brilliantly like choreographed, but like a lot of the battle is kind of hard to follow. You get the most from the reactions from people, don't you?
Yeah, it's I mean most of the battle is just 20 extras standing under a boat. That moment was a great cinematic moment, the realization that Bronn had snuck off on his own and been tasked, and that Tyrion had this amazing plan all thought out. The reveal was really well executed, I thought. It was really well done.
Yeah, it my understanding as well, it was, you know, no one expected wildfire. Nobody sort of Stannis, Davos, they can't comprehend that they would have had this. So it's an amazing moment when they sort of realise that they're playing a completely different game to the Lannisters. It's like a nuclear power. It's the closest thing to having like dragons, right? This propulsive fuel. This like it's sort of slightly magical. I don't. We talked about this in the last episode. I don't quite understand what wildfire is, but it seems like, you know, just potent as fuck.
But what was interesting was it not? It was invented by the Targaryens.
Yeah.
After the last dragon had died, right?
Yeah, didn't the guy in the last episode, the maester, say it's fire given form or something? It's almost like not petrified, but like they've sort of like harnessed it.
According to Westeros.org, obviously a great source of font of all knowledge, it's a volatile flammable liquid which can burn for a long time. It's created by the Alchemists Guild, who refer to it as the substance and keep this recipe a closely guarded secret. It's said to be a close cousin to dragon flame.
Right.
making wildfire is a lengthy and dangerous process. Who claim and it involves magic. The spells used for making wildfire are not as effective as they once were due to the extinction of dragons. Let me just see if we can find. He really did build a great backstory, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. What else does it say?
So, in 174 AC, Aegon the Fourth Targaryen, is that... That's Aegon that we know? No.
Aegon the
Fourth. In House the Dragon. Tried to conquer Dawn. We're on Aegon the Sixth, are we?
We're on Aegon the Second and the Third. So the one on the Third is Aegon the Second.
Right, got you. Okay. Can you just lean a bit closer to your mic, mate?
Sorry, yeah.
Aegon the Fourth tried to conquer Dawn using 7 wooden dragons fitted with pumps that shot jets of wildfire. It was a complete failure as the dragons were made out of wood and went up in flames. I want to see that kind of like Frank Spencer-esque kind of attempt on Dawn, where it's just like, oh shit, I made them out of wood. Damn.
A little vacuum nozzle for the spout that the fire comes. A very sort of DIY.
In 223, Prince Aerion Targaryen drank wildfire, believing it would transform him into a dragon. I don't think it did.
That sounds like an absolute error on his part.
don't drink wildfire.
I thought it was a really good... And also, like, I think... The clever thing with the wildfire in this episode was that, like, I thought they'd be, like, flinging it left, right and centre, but it's all used in that one ship, right? They sort of...
Yeah, the strategy of kind of, like, of it kind of, like, sneaking into the middle of the fleet
just
tearing through it was just
amazing.
I think that
is why when Cersei blows up the Sept with wildfire in season 6, I felt a little bit... cheated, because I've seen that used. Like, it was used so well in this episode where we didn't really know what it was, but it made sense that there'd be some of it, they get loads of it made. And then in season 6 when Cersei does it, it sort of comes out of nowhere that it's like, oh yeah, I just made loads more. And it's I've planned it all.
But do you not think that knowing how volatile it is, that it was quite good to kind of like, oh my God, that's all underneath there. They've got no fucking chance. I quite enjoyed that.
Yeah. Also, just thinking about it now, I mean, that is the Sept that... that would be the same building. Obviously, it looks very different, but it would be the same building that Aegon had his coronation in. And, you know, they had the beast beneath the boards, right? Which was when the dragon bursts out.
Cersei doing it, that's where the wildfire were.
It's kind of like the next generation, like... A false dragon.
The beast beneath the boards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just came to me.
Have we discovered that? I think we'll claim that as our own, right?
Yeah. Parallels. And I think Cersei, like, we know she's sort of fascinated by the Targaryens, and that's the women Targaryens, you know, at a certain point in the show, they are able to wield quite a lot of power. They can ride dragons. They're not equals to the men, but there's a sort of different vibe. I always got the impression in the show and the books that she sort of really admired that culture. Which might be why she's so into fucking her brother. And there's an element of that. So
maybe brother's just really hot. Yeah.
Do you know, Nikolai Coster-Waldau, very handsome man.
More handsome in real life, I think. But everyone looked a bit better in later seasons. Everyone grew, like Jon Snow, like Kit kind of like got more handsome. Jamie did as well. Jamie got a very good haircut. Gendry, you know, even Theon, you know, everyone glowed up a little bit. But
whatever
a reverse of glow up is. And Sansa got dark hair. Remember when Sansa dyed her hair later on?
That was like a whole storyline, wasn't it? Like brunette. I thought she didn't look different enough for it to be so. I'd be like, get some tongs in there, give yourself some ringlets. You know, if you're gonna do like
her wardrobe was amazing though, didn't she? Didn't she like at some point like have amazing like black feathered dress or something at some point?
I think. She always looked like a sort of like sexy crow.
Yeah,
She always has like, yeah, like, she started wearing like really weird jewelry and stuff. I thought actually that was really cool when she, yeah. And I'm looking forward to getting to some parts of that. I mean, I think, you know, there's been a lot of development for a lot of characters this season, but Sansa, it's sort of quite slow. There's a lot of good stuff to come.
Yeah.
Yeah,
100%.
This is one of those seasons. I'd say the same for Bran. Like, you know, we haven't seen a lot of him actually in our rewatch, but like, doesn't really get a lot to do until he goes.
Yeah,
full
I think
robot
also.
Mode.
With Sansa, she really has to. I mean, she just really just get put through the ringer for the first kind of three or four seasons, doesn't she?
Mm. Five.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've got a lot of grimness to come, haven't we?
I really hope we don't have to watch that episode in season five.
Can we not?
Considering
I don't really want to have to
some sort of
talk about it. Yeah, maybe we pull rank on that one. That's it. With season two is done. I enjoyed that. Episode 10 was... I did carry on watching that, actually, just because I couldn't remember how it ended. Weird ending to season 2. Very weird ending. Didn't really
what
have...
What happens? What
much,
are the broad strokes?
It's, well, again, Mandela effect, which I'll talk about in a minute. In my mind, it was where Sam killed the White Walker. But actually, all that happened was Sam was in the snow. He got separated from the couple of knights that he was with, and there was the procession of white walkers kind of went past him and kind of looked a bit terrifying. But as cliffhangers go, didn't really feel that special.
It's quite a... Yes, I remember that now, because then in season 3, the Fist of the First Men, which is where they're staying, gets attacked. Yeah. And like loads of them get... But I don't think we... Do we see it? I don't think we see it. I don't think we see
the
White
one,
Walkers.
No, it's Hardhome. It's Hardhome, isn't it, where John has that fight with this, where the
White
Walker jumps through.
Yeah, I don't think weirdly
roof,
don't.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very weird way to end it, because my reading of it was that they knew Sam was there and they just walked past him.
Yeah, the White Walker looked at him and just went and just like went past my friend
so
Ross
weird.
Mullen.
Because I think like it's safe to say at this point they were like, we need to keep White Walkers in, but we don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, there's right? something happening. Well, because otherwise, without that element in there, obviously they need to keep that like sense of dread bubbling around. But also, without that, there's no point in the wildlings migrating south doesn't make any sense. You know, so which then means that the fight between the Knights of the White Watch and the Knights and for the Wall in season 3 doesn't make any sense either. So it does lend a bit of motivation to a lot of things, doesn't it?
Yeah, so we've got season 3. We're going to be starting that in the new year.
Yes,
right.
We're going to do a different way of voting this time, so that every episode gets a fair shout. Not that I haven't enjoyed the ones that we've been doing. I think we've been really lucky. But I think as time goes on, we've realised that actually we're just separating out into chapters, and that's not very fair, really. So there'll be a long old Twitter thread, 10 tweets in it. Like the 3 that you want us to watch. Maybe I should put a synopsis in that tweet as well, so that you know which episode it is.
Even you could even just link to the episode.
Almost like Friends, like a friend. The one where, you know, where Chandler kills
the ugly
naked guy. Yeah, the ugly naked guy shoots an arrow through Ygritte. Yeah,
the one where Ross sleeps with his sister.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Did
that actually happen? Yeah. I linked to the Wikipedia page of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because some episodes, it's like, it's not an episode about any one thing, but lots of cool stuff happens.
Yeah.
I think season 3, we'll talk about this when we get into it. I think it is probably the best season
the
for me,
season.
Actually.
The best season, okay.
I think it's
is it not good? Which is the one where there's just a lot of dawn?
5.
Which is that one? That's 5.
5.
That's
5 is
one.
A season of high highs and low, low lows, because it was starting to fall apart. I think 3, you know, and would it be interesting, because, you know, I've rewatched it a couple of times, right? But like the signs of a red wedding are all there when you watch it back.
Yes,
kind of. Not exactly,
well, I'm looking forward to that, like, then, because I didn't pick up on any of the signs. I was proper YouTube reaction video, the screaming.
Red Wedding is a really interesting episode because it's a bit like when we talked about Baylor. The wedding happens kind of in a vacuum, and the rest of the episode is like, Bran sits in a castle and talks about wolves. You know, it's quite like, it's good, but it's quite weird. I can't remember. I mean, yeah, there's some that I'd really like us to cover. I don't want to like say which ones, and I don't want to swing the votes. But
Blind Faith, Chris Mandel, Blind Faith. Put your faith.
But I think
the
whole thing is great. I think the whole thing is great. I think it's really
great. Lovely stuff.
Cool.
Listen. If this is Christmas Day, what are you doing right now? Are you with family? Are you with your fella? What's going on? Where are you?
Me specifically. Christmas up in Carlisle with the Mandels. Rob is down with his family in Croydon.
Do they know about each other? Are you kind of like, are you pretending you've got a wife somewhere? Are you both pretending you've got a wife somewhere? Or is it all open and friendly?
I pretend I have several wives. In
Yeah.
No, yeah.
That is the Carlisle way. Yeah.
It is, yeah. Ours is, we reap what we sow, or whatever the sigil is. No, our families are pals. They get on quite well. Yeah, so that's good.
Oh, there we go.
The mums text each other. It's lovely. And also the great thing is, you know, because we're recording this just before Christmas. I'm putting this out there. My Avanti train taking me to Carlisle did not get cancelled. There was no breakdown. I got there safely, and I'm just manifesting.
You're manifesting.
Yeah, tell me about your Christmas Day plans. What's on the table?
I'm off to New York on Sunday for 4 days, just to kind of take the younger Easts there. They've never been there.
I love that.
So, and I think because of that, because that's like a big thing, that it's not going to be quite a big event for Christmas Day. It'll be nice and quiet, just me, Mrs. East, and the four young wildlings, and just kind of hanging out, really.
That'll be fun.
They're just like hanging out with each other, because like our eldest has moved out, so it's always like he gets to be the prince that was promised, and just kind of like glides back in, and the other three are just like, oh my god, Oliver's here, and you know, he's the Lord of the Light. He kind of like just
he's your heir.
Up.
He's your heir, right? So
he is. Yeah, of nothing in particular. Yeah. Just before we go, our Mandela effect thing that we were talking about with episode, the one where we thought it began, season 2, episode 1. No, someone got in touch basically saying, yes, what we'd done was got confused with the one where Stannis was sacrificing his brother, his wife's brothers. I think that was it.
Oh my God, yes, that opens season 3.
Yeah. So we've got
that's
that
the season 3 opener. Yes. Oh my God. I'm so glad. Who got in touch with you to say that?
Don't ask me.
Sorry,
don't
I'll ask not me. Ask. Someone... That's right. Because he feels like he needs to offer some appeasement to the Lord of Light, because he felt like the battle, he didn't do a good enough sacrifice or something, right? Is that it?
Yeah, because in episode 10 of season 2, he's kind of very confused, tries to strangle Melisandre, because he's just like, what the fuck happened? And she was just kind of like, oh, you didn't do it hard enough, or you didn't try hard enough. And he was a bit like, what more do you want? And as we find out in season 3, it was burning his brothers-in-law.
Oh my God. And that's why we meet, is because we haven't really met his wife yet, have we?
Correct.
I do think it's a bit crazy because
she goes in further than he does, doesn't she?
Yeah, well, she's the. I thought in the books at least she's the original. Like, yeah, the Lord of Light, love him, and then Stannis is like, what if I just like burn all your brothers? But you know, that's such a fucking Targaryen move.
Yeah,
you know, the Targaryens do it, and they're called like, you know, savages, and then he does it, and it's like, this was a great move. Well done.
Exactly.
It's such a good episode.
We are rambling right on. Yeah.
Such a good episode. I feel like we're both a bit giddy with Christmas and my broadband being appalling.
I know. Exactly. We're going crazy. This will go out Christmas Day, which means that there won't be an episode out Monday the 21st, unless I've got things higgledy-piggledy.
That is correct.
So this will go out Christmas Day. Happy Christmas to everybody. We will be back. We'll be back soon. We might have an OA episode to drop as well.
Yeah.
But all being well, we'll probably be back on the 9th of January.
It's quite a wait. 3 weeks. It's also my birthday between then, just in case anyone wants to send any.
Oh, when's your birthday?
Chocolate. 3rd of January.
When's your birth? 3rd of January. What a tough day to have a birthday.
What day is your... When's your birthday?
March 27th, i.e.
Oh, like, that's a nice time.
Enough space, enough space after Christmas for people to have saved up money.
Mm. It's a tough time of year, Jan 3rd. You get all everyone's unwanted presents repackaged.
Including your own.
Including.
Lovely
anyway,
stuff. Buddy, have a great Christmas and a lovely New Year's Eve. Thank you to everybody for listening and all the support you've shown us throughout 2022. It's been an absolute, not only a joy, but a complete surprise as well. Take care, everybody. Dracarys.
Dracarys.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter at @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for DragonCast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. DragonCast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.